Welcome, and thanks for listening to Intrinsic Investigations. My name is Mr. Olivo, and I created this podcast because I've been fortunate enough over the last decade to see unique and thought-provoking projects happen in my classroom, and we wanted a place to showcase them. The true heart of this podcast lies not in the content discovered, but in exploring the personal stories of these young researchers as they journey through uncharted and unfamiliar intellectual terrain. By sharing their stories, we hope to normalize the challenges and frustrations that come with independent research, and also share those moments where students transcend the normal grind of the school day to discover concepts that range from the global to deeply personal. We will begin with a brief introduction to the student of focus, why they picked their topic, and discuss their growth over the course of the last year. It should be mentioned that the opinions expressed in this podcast in no way reflect the opinions of our school district, Bergen County Technical Schools and Special Services, or our school itself, Bergen County Technical High School Teterboro, or the College Board. The work detailed in this podcast was most likely completed in AP Capstone, but this podcast is in no way affiliated with the College Board. For this episode, Ben is going to explain how he explored anthropomorphic language about AI by experts in the field. All right, so I'm sitting here with Ben. Ben, you want to introduce yourself to the audience? Who are you? Why are you here? What do you care about? What drives you?
Right. So as Mr. Levo here already said, yeah, my name is Ben. I really like AI, and so for my research project, I kind of just wanted to do something around AI.
What do you like about AI? I mean, by the way, I had a whole bunch of questions there, but all we know right now is your name is Ben and you like AI. Should people know anything else about you before we continue talking about the AI?
I don't know. What else should they know?
I don't know. I'm not you, Ben. That's why we're having this conversation. What else should they know before they know that you're interested in AI? Did you always have this interest in AI?
Right. I am a junior at Bergen Tech, but I feel like that is implied.
Well, now it's explicitly stated. Continue.
Explicitly stated. That's basically all for my introduction. Don't have much to say.
Ben, I hear you make bubble tea. Is that true?
Yes, that actually is true. I do work 2 to 1 day a week, and I work for 6 hours, 4 to 9.
Okay, I just want to emphasize to the audience that Ben is more than the sum of his academic performance and his work. But I'm just trying to draw something out of him right now. I guarantee you this will be a really interesting interview. Once Ben tells us one other thing that people should know about him. Ben, go ahead. I heard you enjoy mixed martial arts.
Yes. yes, I do like mixed martial arts. I have a second degree black belt in taekwondo, and I dabble a little bit in jiu-jitsu, boxing, wrestling.
Did AI help you get any of those accolades, or these are all self?
No. These ChatGPT can't teach you how to fight. So, I studied for quite a few years. I think since I was 10, so around 6 years now.
Okay. All right. So this is Ben. He loves MMA. He loves AI. He loves acronyms. Let's get into the discussion. So AI, before we talk about your research, why do you like AI? What is your affinity towards AI?
So I always found it really interesting how AI was very different from traditional computer programming, in which traditional programming entails a human telling a computer exactly what to do, and it just does it on loop. But with AI, it's really just giving a computer a task and telling it to do it, not telling it how exactly, and, well, it does it.
I'm assuming you've played a video game in your life?
Most definitely.
Okay. How have you seen AI evolve in that particular context? Because I feel as an old person, the first time I ever dealt with artificial quote-unquote intelligence was the idea that you're feeding essentially a set of rules to the computer, and the computer is then trying to combat the user in some way. But have you seen that get better in your lifetime, get worse? Like, what's your take on, I know it's a different type of artificial intelligence than what you worked on, but how does it relate to gaming?
Right. So AIs, as people like to call them in games, or bots, aren't really like true AI. They just have a set of instructions and make a set of decisions based upon some given circumstances that are calculated through the game engine. And yeah, these do get better, but really, AI hasn't really changed this too much. Maybe gave them some new functionalities to make them slightly more unpredictable, but really not much has changed there.
Okay, so the type of AI that you focused on for your project, what is that compared to the bot type AI that someone who's only really interacted in a more of a gaming capacity would know about?
Right. So the AI that I focused on in my research was more towards the machine learning side of AI. So the bots in those video games have a predefined set of instructions that they carry out and make decisions based on those instructions. Machine learning, on the other hand, isn't really given instructions. You kind of just feed a bunch of samples, so sample problems and sample solutions, into a system, and based upon past samples, it generates a probable answer to the problem that you give it.
All right, and in the past year, since OpenAI, I believe last November or last October, was really came to the forefront of people's consciousness in terms of AI, how have you seen that change your day-to-day life as a student, practitioner of MMA, and bubble tea maker?
So, not much has changed making bubble tea and being an MMA fighter. Those really stay the same. But I am a major in the computer science over here in Bergen Tech, and well, I use ChatGPT quite a lot in my work to generate code that I feel is repetitive, or to just get ideas or inspiration on how I can code things into my projects.
Does it ever make you frustrated when you see what it can do in such a short period of time, where you're like, oh, it was taking me months or days to come up with what it came up with? Maybe months and days is extreme. Maybe hours, but to have it do in seconds what it would take you to do in hours, do you ever get annoyed by that?
You see, I feel like I should, but not really, as it can't really do an entire job right now. It doesn't have a full grasp of concept, and it only does what you tell it to do, really. So I feel it is very useful as a tool, and so if it saves me those hours, I feel happy that it saves me those hours.
You're not afraid it's going to take your job?
Okay. I'm not.
Well, we know it's not going to take the bubble tea job, but your future endeavors as someone in the workforce, you're confident that you're human enough to differentiate yourself from what something like an LLM can do at this point?
I would say I'm around maybe 80% confident.
Sounds like an answer an AI would give, but Ben is most assuredly human. Well, but I don't want to get into a Turing test right now.
So that makes it sound suspicious.
Yeah, I know, doesn't it? So is this podcast even real, or was it generated using AI?
You're the one with the script.
That's exactly what an AI would say. So this is where we need to kind of get into the nature of your work. So your work was about anthropomorphic language regarding artificial intelligence. Because I think, and I'm trying to, whether jokingly or not, get into the idea of the fear of, maybe the, not fear isn't the right word, but the misconception that people have where they place very human-like qualities onto these AI. And again, if we go to the gaming example, again, bots are not the same level of what we're talking about, but I'm sure there's many people who've gotten angry at a bot for defeating them in some kind of gaming capacity.
Oh, most definitely.
Are you one of those people, Ben?
You know, I really want to say no, but
it's happened.
Yes,
it's happened.
Definitely. So you see, my work here kind of focuses more on like the framing of how people talk about these new AIs, because these new AIs, especially ChatGPT, these LLMs, have capabilities that can be described as remarkably human. And so As such, when talking about them or referring to them, we often use language that insinuates that they are what they appear to be, human. And as that's not really the case, I wanted to see, like, what exactly, like, if this manifests, and if so, how it manifests.
And why is understanding this trick in our language, why is that important, do you think? Not just for you, but for people in general.
Right. So language is, it's interesting because this topic also goes a little into philosophy and how we think of ourselves, as language is really just how we convey what we're thinking, what we're feeling. And so the analyzing the language around something that is upcoming and prominent like this kind of really just shows how we think of this new technology.
So how did you go about investigating this problem, this issue that you're seeing in our anthropomorphizing language regarding AI?
Could I have some more context with that problem? Like, yeah, which part exactly?
So, you know, your issue that you're investigating is anthropomorphizing language regarding AI.
Right.
Who did you choose to focus on? Why did you choose to focus on them? And how did you conduct your research investigation?
Right. So, the people with the highest influence in the public sphere are actually experts in this field, as since this is an up-and-coming field, not much really is known, and not many articles that that are extremely detailed are published, at least to popular media outlets. And so experts hold a big weight in influencing public opinion. And so I decided to revolve my research around analyzing how they use anthropomorphic language.
And what did your study reveal?
So my study found that experts do use different types of anthropomorphic language under different contexts and depending on the message they intend to convey to their audience. So, for example, when explaining the functionings of a machine learning model or an AI, they will often use metaphors, especially to the human brain, which a neural network, which is a fundamental principle in which nodes or small little boxes perform calculations and send them to other small little boxes until we have the most probable answer that the final node outputs. They compare that a lot to how the human brain works and how we make decisions. And yeah.
So then how does that transfer into anthropomorphizing language? So the neural network comparison, I could see you're by the nature of saying neural network, you're putting it in a human brain, but honestly, I mean, there's other organisms that have brains other than humans. Like squirrels, for example, have neural networks. What about the neural networks in AI is more human? I guess, is it because it's processing things like language, where it's not like a squirrel that's just foraging and, you know, more like environmental response? Is that where you're going with this?
So I'd say by association. So when we think of brain, we usually think of things that are like smart, intelligence, and those we wouldn't think of a squirrel to be acting with intelligence. We usually think of...
We should. There are mammal brethren and we should be thinking that way. But go ahead, Ben.
We usually think of humans to be intelligent. And so a lot of the comparisons here, the way they're implied is usually because these AIs do a lot of things that are normally associated with humans, right? Such as generating text, writing stories, creating images. We don't really associate these with animals like squirrels. We associate these more with humans. And so anthropomorphic language in this sense, when it's used, even though it can be applied to other animals like the squirrel when talking about neural networks, it is more often associated with humans because other traits are associated with humans.
I see what you're saying. So because the output of these AI is so human-like, that's where we then put the personification. We then think that they're more human-like because the tasks are human-like themselves.
Right.
Interesting. So how did you make this determination that you just said? What was your method? Like if someone wanted to do what you did, what's the method that you used to try to explore this?
So what I did was I wanted to provide a little introduction into the field, just a brief overview. So I analyzed some videos on YouTube in which an expert tries to convey a message to an audience, whether a live audience or like the audience sitting behind the screen watching the video. And so I marked down instances of what I deemed to be anthropomorphic language and what was considered anthropomorphic in past studies. And then I tallied up the results and did my research.
So who was considered an expert? You know, you're watching YouTube videos, but you're not watching YouTube videos of Mr. Beast talking about AI. Or maybe you are. He has a huge amount of influence.
Mr. Beast would definitely not be considered an expert here.
So what were the inclusion criteria you had in place to consider this is an expert on AI?
So I actually had a kind of a hard time with this one because it's really hard to determine what should constitute an expert. The study that deemed that experts were influential in this field kind of defined them as just any individual who claimed to be a thinker or a scholar or just to have a degree. So basically someone who claimed to know what they were talking about and were known for something, just being a public intellectual. And so what I settled on was just that publicity. I wanted the videos that I analyzed all had an advertised credential. And how I defined this was in the video, if it just showed Professor Blank with a PhD in Blank or a well-known thinker or something, any other credential like that.
And did that yield you what you wanted? Did you feel like in the end you were getting a pretty good representation of who, you were confident that these were experts in the field on AI and not, I'm sure there's plenty of people on the internet who think things and say things and think and say that they are experts on something.
Of course.
But, yeah. But did you feel like you got a good start at representing what experts are saying out there right now on YouTube?
I'd say so. These experts no one just stated that they were an expert. It was always backed up with some credential or the other, whether it be a co-founder or founder of a company, years of work experience, or just a degree in machine learning or AI.
Cool. What would you say was the biggest challenge in trying to make this project happen over the course of the year?
You see, the biggest challenge would probably just be determining the platform. I spent a large amount of my time like sifting through Twitter, Reddit, but like I did realize that a lot of the messages were just too short for me to analyze them properly and find anthropomorphism within them. And so I had to like look around until finally settling on YouTube, which for me actually was suboptimal because the past study I was basing some of my codes off of was based on written text analysis. So I actually had to do some modifications and account for some things before I could actually analyze.
Obviously, this is a topic that's evolving quite quickly. And it's becoming more and more commonplace in people's lives. Even right now, I have in my Gmail Google trying to sell me on, you know, augment some AI facet in terms of my Google experience. That wasn't there, I think, 3 weeks ago. But what would you say to your audience regarding anthropomorphizing language? Should they embrace it? Should they see AI as their friend? Like, oh, it's my buddy. Like, you know, should they make it like that? Or should there be a certain arm's length relationship with AI and really just seeing it as a tool? Because once you're, and I think we see this with cell phones, once a cell phone becomes your friend, your relationship with that device changes. If you see it as a tool for communicating with your friends and then you get off of it once you're actually with your friends and you have real socialization, that's a different thing. But what, I don't know, what is your take from your conclusions in your work as to how we should approach our relationship with AI.
So my research kind of shows that you might want to keep it at arm's length. And the words that we use to describe it, even if we don't truly believe them, like I can call ChatGPT my friend or my coworker because it always helps me with my code, and I can also like not believe that it's conscious, it's a human, and it's a human actor. But if I say it enough times, eventually I will come to believe that it may actually be a friend or a coworker, and so this self-delusion shouldn't really be a part of this interacting with AIs.
Because your language is shaping your perception, which is shaping your reality.
Right.
Some deep stuff. Ben, any last words you'd like to say to your audience before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I guess just thank you for listening. And I really enjoyed this, and I hope you enjoyed some of this experience, if not all. But yeah, that's it.
That's a very nuanced response right there. Some of it, but not all of it. Maybe all of it.
Perhaps all of it. Hopefully all of it.
All right, great. And just to remember, Ben is a person of many talents, bubble tea, MMA. It's all there. He was selling himself short in the beginning of the podcast. Have a lovely day. Thank you, and goodbye.